The date is July 10th, 1998, and we're watching Small Soldiers. Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Hello and welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. My name is Sean Wells, and with me, as always, is the Insaniac to my Freakenstein.
Hello, everybody. It's Colin Stewart.
I went with the, what are they, Gorgons? Is that what they're called?
Yeah, the Gorgonites.
Gorgonites, yeah. They have more fun names. Well, I guess there's a couple good ones in the other guys. But anyway, this week we're looking back at July 1998 when the movies and theaters were Dr. Doolittle, Lethal Weapon 4, Out of Sight, the subject of episode 144, Armageddon, and of course our movie for today, Small Soldiers, which earned $71.8 million on a $40 million budget.
Too shabby. Especially when you compare it to Canadian bacon.
Yeah, unlike last week's, these numbers are much more in the favor and make much more sense than last week's movie, that's for sure.
Yes, sir. But as always, there will be spoilers ahead. So if you don't want this movie to be spoiled for you, like, nothing's coming to me.
Like I got nothing.
Like your legs getting chopped off in a garbage disposal.
Oh, there you go, yeah.
Then please press pause, go watch the movie, and then come back and hear what we have to say.
That kind of spoils you pretty hard, yeah. So, interestingly, I mean, we are here with our final posthumously released movie, our final Wish You Were Here in the New Year movie, to honor Phil Hartman. And I guess the murder of Phil Hartman before the premiere of this movie caused his character to not appear in any of the print ads. They didn't capitalize on his death. They didn't, they didn't use him in the end. So, and it's interesting because like the poster has like no, or, you know, the movie itself has almost no human characters that they would exclude him. But anyway, but speaking of posters, the tagline that appears on the poster, I've got six this week. First one. That surprises you?
I've only ever seen one.
Oh, okay. Well, first one, Big Trouble, Small Soldiers. Yeah?
Okay.
Yeah? That's not the one you're thinking of? No. Okay. Number two, Big Movie, Small Soldiers.
There you go. That's the one. That's the one right there.
Okay. Well, number three, Big Action, Big Trouble, Big Movie.
Wait, are the next ones like Big Action and Big Trouble?
Well, no, number four, The Few, The Proud, and The Small.
Okay.
Yeah. Number five, on July 10th, Size Isn't Everything. It's probably an ad that's been used for, like, Ant-Man and Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Well, finally, number six, This Summer, Join the Commando Elite.
All right. I don't know which one I like best. I think I like the big pun, the big whatever. Maybe it's like an oxymoron.
Big Trouble, Small
I think.
Shoulders.
Like, I like those ones.
Yeah. They're weak, pretty much all across the board. The weak sauce. They really leaned into the size of everything, though. Big Movie, Small Soldiers, Big Movie, you know, Big Trouble, Small, Big Action, whatever. Yeah. But doesn't tell us much. So let's go to Colin for a 60-second synopsis.
Okay. This one is long, too. Alrighty. When top defense contractor Global Tech Industries acquires the Heartland Toy Company, CEO Gil Mars commissions toy designers Larry Benson and Irwin Wayfair to develop toys capable of playing back. Mars selects Larry's Commando Elite action figures for the project, with Erwin's Gorgonites, peaceful monsters intended to be educational toys, as their enemies. Facing a tight deadline, Larry unwittingly equips the toys with Globotech's X-1000 microprocessor, which he later learns was meant for the Department of Defense. Meanwhile, working at his family's toy store, teenager Alan Abernathy persuades delivery driver Joe to give him a shipment of the new Globotech toys, activating Major Chip Hazard, head of the Commando Elite, and Archer, the Gorgonites' leader. Alan develops a crush on his neighbor, Christy Fimple, and returns home to discover Archer in his backpack, realizing the toys are essentially self-aware and capable of learning. That night, Chip activates his comrades to attack the Gorgonites, and Alan finds the store in disarray and the new toys missing. Following Alan home, the Commando Elite interrogate Archer, but Alan intervenes and is wounded by Nick Nitro, whom he partially destroys in the garbage disposable. Spoilers. Alan and Archer find the Gorgonites hiding in the store's dumpster. Seeking reinforcement, the Commando Elite then infiltrate Christie's house and use Nick Nitro's AI chip to bring Christie's Gwendy fashion dolls to life. Taking Christie hostage, they demand that Alan surrender the Gorgonites. Alan and Archer rescue Christie and seemingly destroy the Commando Elite, but Chip survives and later arrives with a new army of Commando Elite, having hijacked a shipment of toys and lay siege to the house. When Larry and Erwin arrive and suggest an EMP will destroy the chips, the group realizes they can overload the nearby power lines. Alan climbs the utility pole and is attacked by Chip, who battles and defeats Archer, but Alan thrusts Chip into the power transformer, triggering the EMP blast and destroying the toys. In the morning, Mars arrives, pays everyone off, and instructs Larry and Erwin to repurpose the Commando Elite for military use. Alan and Christy make out, and he discovers the Gorgonites survive the EMP underneath the Fimple satellite dish. Alan brings the Gorgonites to Yosemite National Park and shares a goodbye before sending them off in his father's toy boat to find their home. The end.
Yeah, you're right. That wasn't a short one.
I only had time to watch it once, so I just had to write as I was watching.
Ah, Small Soldiers. It's one of these movies that I mentioned it before, but I've only kind of got a casual knowledge of this movie. You know, I've seen it a couple times, but it's more on the peripheral of my life because it was one that my brother had. I remember this was one that... It's a PG-13 rated movie, but it came in a clamshell. The VHS came in a clamshell. And I was interested to find out in the trivia that it's one of the only PG-13 movies that did, and it's the last one that did.
Hmm.
And it's like, oh, I remember that one, though. I remember that clamshell. But yeah, this is one that I enjoyed because I love Toy Story, and this was kind of like, what if Buzz Lightyear didn't have Woody there to tell him that he was a toy? That's kind of what this movie feels, you know? And so I dug it, but I don't even own this movie. It's a neat movie. I always thought it was, right? So that's my history. No big one. Mm-hmm. Colin, I know this is, you know, 98 is kind of your pocket, but what is your history with Small Soldiers?
Yeah, I mean, I also, like, I mean, even now, like, I love toys, I love action figures, so I remember, and I also, like, loved Toy Story, and I remember when this movie came out thinking that it looked like a, I remember thinking of it more as, like, unfortunately, as a Toy Story ripoff, which it's not really, I would say it's actually, like, Toy Story, like, for, like, if Toy Story is made for kids, Small Soldiers is like made Toy Story for teens. It's like the YA Toy Story.
Yeah, this isn't A Bug's Life and Ants.
No.
It's not that kind of ripoff going on. Yeah, it's definitely its own thing. If anything, Small Soldiers rips off the Gremlins.
Yeah. And so I remember that I did own it on VHS, but I really only think I watched it like a few times. It didn't really... It just never really like connected with me that much, and for whatever reason, I feel like there I'm sure there was a massive toy line, but I don't feel like the toys were really, they either weren't accessible to me or they weren't marketed well, because I don't remember ever owning any toys related to this movie.
Yeah, I don't remember my brother ever owning any toys related either. I only remember that clamshell VHS.
Yeah. So yeah, it's kind of a movie that I watched as a kid and then never thought about again.
Yeah. All right. Well, right on. Well, I'm glad that we get to experience this. Well, here we go. Let's jump in to Small Soldiers, directed by our old pal Joe Dante. We've had him a few times on this show. Explorers, Gremlins. So, I mean, that's why I definitely see the Gremlins comparison. You know, that jumps right to mind with Joe Dante.
Yeah, part of me actually wonders if maybe I would, like, because I hadn't watched Gremlins as a kid, if maybe this movie would have appealed to me more if I had. Because the tone is very similar. It has whatever Joe Dante's, like, you know, his, like, you know, it's like...
That's his stamp.
His J.J. Yeah. Abrams lens flare, like, it's this type of feel.
Produced by Michael Fennell, Colin Wilson, and written by Gavin Scott, Adam Rifkin, Ted Elliott, and Terry Rossio. Never good news when there's that many writers, but I don't know. I don't think it's necessarily a detriment to it in this case, but we'll see. So my first thought was, oh yeah, this was like back when DreamWorks really needed to work with other people to get things off the ground, because I was impressed by like the fact that it's like DreamWorks and Universal. Like those are the first two things you see with, you know, is the logo of these two theaters. And it's just, it's crazy to think of a time when like DreamWorks was still just starting out.
Yeah. I kind of felt the same way about Pixar, like when we watched Toy Story, and you're like, oh, this was the beginning. Like it's still it's not like the big film house that it's become now, part of Disney and everything.
Yeah, I like the cheesy promo style video that they have for Globotech. I mean, I thought it was a well-made thing. Their introduction to the company and what Globotech does.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to the Globotech family.
Yeah. I was excited to see Dennis Leary. You don't really get to see that guy anymore. And he just has such a distinct attitude that I enjoy.
Yeah. I mean, and they just give him Dennis Leary rants. That's all they do with Dennis Leary is, you know, in Demolition Man, what do they do with it? He gets to have a big long rant about something, and he gets that in this movie as well. Well, let's talk about this cast, because we got Dennis Leary as Mr. Gil Mars, but this is an unbelievable cast. I think this is one of the most impressive casts that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it was
outside of like an Oceans movie, Wes Anderson movie, you know, Asteroid City has everybody in it.
Yeah. So we have Kristen. How do you do that? Kirsten Dunst is Christy Fimple. Gregory Smith, who I was trying to figure out why I knew that guy's face, and it's because he's in another one of my favorite childhood movies, Harriet the Spy. But Gregory Smith is in this movie as Alan Abernathy.
They wanted Joseph Mazzello, who is Tim from Jurassic Park. That was one person they tried to get for this movie. Hmm. That was alternate casting, yeah.
Jay Moore plays Larry Benson. What else do I know him from?
Well, he's an SNL guy, so he shows up in a lot of those kind of movies.
Okay.
Yeah.
Phil Hartman is here as Phil Fimple.
Mm-hmm.
Kevin Dunn plays Stuart Abernathy.
Yeah, we saw him a couple weeks ago with Almost Heroes.
Right.
Hidalgo.
Dennis Leary is Gil Mars. Ann Magnuson is Irene Abernathy, a very young David Cross.
Very young.
As Irwin Wayfair.
So young. Like, I remember when you said in Men in Black how young he was, and it's, you know, same thing here. Mm-hmm. Like, that's the same year, isn't it? 98.
Yep.
Yeah.
Wendy Shaw plays Marion Fimple. Jacob Smith plays Timmy Fimple. There's a bunch of other people Dick Miller plays Joe.
But Dick Miller, we've seen him a couple times too, because he is like in every Joe Dante movie we've seen. Because he was in Gremlins and Explorers and.
And then
the voices. The voice cast blows my mind. Yeah.
Yeah, the voice cast is where things get insane. So the Gorgonites, we have Frank Langella as Archer, Chris Guest as Slam Fist Scratchit, Michael McKean as Insaniac Troglicon, later known as Freakenstein. Harry Shearer plays Punchit, Jim Cummings is Ocula. Then we have.
With those guys, those are all Spinal Tap guys.
Right? Yeah, and I thought it was funny that I've never seen this before, but in the credits, they say, like, they credit them as the voices of Spinal Tap.
Yeah. Yeah, and the other guys as the Dirty Dozen.
Yeah.
And I have to laugh because of the fact that with Canadian Bacon, they have the big Dirty Dozen conversation.
Oh, right.
It's like, oh, yeah, all these guys are in this movie.
Yeah. So with the Commando Elite, we have Tommy Lee Jones as Major Chip Hazard, George Kennedy as Brick Bazooka, Jim Brown as Butch Meathook, Ernst Borgnine as Kip Killigan, Clint Walker as Nick Nitro, and Bruce Dern as Link Static.
Now, they originally wanted the Predator crew. It would have been Arnold. That's who Joe Dante originally wanted. Yeah, Arnold and Shane Black and Jesse Ventura. Yeah.
And then... to top it off, we get like...
to top it off. Cherry on top.
Yeah, the cherry on top is like the 90s sweethearts Sarah Michelle Gellar and Christina Ricci as the Gwendy dolls.
Yeah. Like, it just gets insane. It's stupid cast. I can't believe it. Wow.
I'm just reading here. I mean, I guess he didn't die, but this was also Clint Walker's last role before he retired from acting.
Oh, okay. Like you said, baby David Cross is who we open up with. We get the David Cross and Jay Moore hallway scene. And they meet the executive assistant named Miss Kegel. Like, like the crotch exercises? Like,
yeah. The pelvic floor exercises?
Yeah. Flexing the old grundle? Yeah, like the, it's, okay. I didn't know whether that was supposed to be a joke or not.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I actually found her to be kind of like one of the more interesting, like she doesn't do much, but it always seemed like she had, every time she was on screen, it seemed like she had more to do. Like she was she was running the show a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. But they are at Globotech or whatever the subsidiary of Globotech, this toy company, to pitch their new toy. I like the difference between the two characters, though, with the one that has the flip chart and the one that has the badass commercial. But yeah, this is where we get the Dennis Leary rant, though, where it's like, does it actually do that? We need it to do that. And then he goes on some tirade about America or something.
Yeah, I mean, I like that he at first, like when David Cross is talking about his toys, he gets to the part where he's like, yeah, they're educational. He's just like, next.
Yeah. Well, because you know how that would be. I guess Burger King, though, decided to use it in their kids' meals, though, when it came out. But before they found out it was rated PG-13.
Oh.
But Burger King has a history of doing that, because they also did that with Wild Wild West, which is also a PG-13 movie. But I guess the movie was released soon after an Oregon teen named Kip Kinkle went and killed his parents and then went on a shooting rampage in a high school. And so the Kip Killigan figure was not released in Oregon. It was not distributed in Burger King's in Oregon because of the name Kip being associated with this kid that went on a shooting spree.
Also, his last name is Killigan, so...
Yeah, yeah, so it probably doesn't help. So, yeah. I mean, I don't know whether how this movie did in Oregon, but... So, soon after this opening scene with the toy company where they decide that, okay, no, we will make these toys smart enough to do everything it says in the commercial, we go off and we meet the kid, our hero for the movie, I guess. Alan is, yeah. I guess he's the hero of the movie. It's a pretty wide-ranging, like, it's a pretty ensemble cast that we have going here, so I don't know whether I can necessarily say that he's the star. But I have to say that Alan does not look age-appropriate for Kirsten Dunst. Like, these two characters, I'm sure they actually are the same age, but boy, oh boy, does Kirsten Dunst look a lot older.
Yeah, I was shocked at the end when they have that little lip-locking session, because it just looked like a tiny boy making out with a grown woman, almost.
Yeah, so. Yeah, like, it just... I'm looking at the scene where she comes in with her little brother and they're teeing it up to be a love story, and I'm just like, really? Like, this looks like, you know, he's like
he could be your brother's friend. And,
yeah, she's a senior in high school. He's in junior high, you know, yeah.
I would be curious to know, like, what the age difference between the two of them is.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at it real quick here. So she's currently 41. And he is currently 40. So, yeah, there's only one. Oh. Gregory Edward Smith and I have the same birthday.
Oh, look at that. Well, if you ever want proof that girls do indeed mature faster than boys, there you go. Or is it just because I'm so used to Kirsten Dunst as Mary Jane Watson?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, she definitely looks a lot older than him in this movie.
Yeah.
And I'm guessing they're about, like, they're not high. Like, I would say they're, like, middle school, like, junior high, like, in Canada. Like, they seem, yeah, like, about junior high school age.
Grade that 9, 10, maybe?
Yeah, and that typically would be around the time, like, where the girls, like, would still look considerably, like, older than the boys, I feel like.
Yeah, that's true. I don't know. I just, I never bought Mary Jane as a high school student either. So
yes.
Kirsten Dunst just kind of looks unnaturally old.
Yeah. I mean, it served her well, I feel like nowadays, because she still kind of looks the same. It's almost kind of like, who's like a male version of this? I lost it, but you know. There's always those guys who like
she just aged fast, like and stopped.
Like Sam Jackson. Like I recently learned that Sam Jackson is like 80 years old, and in my mind, he's been the same age for like 30 years.
He's 80? Holy shit! I thought he was like, you know, like maybe low 70s, high 60s, but 80?
No,
holy,
he's 80.
Fuck! Wow. Good for him. And he's still running? Like, I'm 45 and I don't run.
Well, I mean, funny about that, he did... I'm listening to this book right now called MCU. It's like all about the rise of Marvel Studios. And it is funny because he did have it in his contract for the Avengers movie with Joss Whedon that he wasn't going to have any running scenes, and he was mad because they put like one small one in. Oh, he's 75.
75.
But still.
Still, yeah. Wow. Good for him. Yeah, he looks like he's, I don't know. I mean, I haven't watched Pulp Fiction in a while, but I still feel like he looks exactly like he did in at least Die Hard, when we watched, yeah, Die Hard.
Yeah.
The only problem is that the definition is getting higher on film. That's the problem.
I
guess. So they end up buying microchips from the army, and then these toys can actually kind of do everything. Now, I had a note here that said, so far, the CGI is actually kind of legit. But I didn't realize that this was Stan Winston. Those are puppets. I thought it was, like, incredible CGI the whole time. Yeah, I watched the movie until I got to the credits.
I was going to ask, like, because I, in my mind, like, thinking Toy Story, I remember it being, yeah, CGI. But there are so many times where I was watching the movie where I was just like, it's too good.
Mm-hmm.
It's too good to be like completely computer generated. And there have to be parts where it's like almost not stop motion, but like it has to be like real figures and stuff like moving and that, yeah, sort of thing. But Yeah, I didn't look into it. I'm glad you did.
Yeah, so it was all creature creation, and it's like, holy shit. I mean, there was probably some CG, but yeah, I mean, for me, I thought, wow, look how good Toy Story looks after 3 years. Like, they took the Toy Story technology and ran with it in real life, but it's like, oh, no, okay, no. Yeah, puppets. Good. Yeah, but impressive puppets.
Mm-hmm.
They do look really good.
Yeah, I will say that I didn't. Not that it matters, but because we're in a podcast where we break things down, I did struggle with the mechanics of how these toys come to life.
Yeah,
because they make it seem like it's like I could just grab, say, my Power Rangers action figure that's all plastic with like little knot and just put a chip on it, and all of a sudden the chip is gonna bring it, like, animate it to life. Like, that's kind of how it works with the Barbies. Which was weird, the Gwendy dolls.
Well, yes, see, and that's where the science falls apart, because at least with the dolls, they are meant to be learning, you know, figurines. Like, they're like a Furby. They're like, you know, any Teddy Ruxpin. There's something that already have the mechanics to talk and say things.
Yeah.
But it's this chip that's what brings them to life. So that makes sense. You're right, though, about the Gwendy dolls, where it's like, yeah, I can't just put a chip in my Power Ranger or my He-Man. And
yeah, because then it's also like, why? So, like, after Alan goes back to the store, he gets them all. And then they have that scene where I think it's after... It's after they find the place trashed, and him and Archer are going on the bike, mm-hmm. and the one guy, I can't remember which one, but the commando puts the rope on the bike, and he's getting dragged off, and he eventually gets ran over, and his legs are all up, blah blah, and he's split in half, and he's damaged, but they're able to repair him and fix him, but like Nick Nitro, like he gets chopped in half. And he just, like, he dies for some reason. That's like one of the things to me that doesn't make logical sense.
Maybe it depends where your chip is.
But it seemed like all their chips were in their heads.
Well, Nick Nitro carries his in his pants.
I guess. But we do see them take it out of his head. But it was also, with Nick Nitro, is when he gets chopped in half, his legs are all like metal and stuff, and it seems like there is some robotics to his core and everything.
Yeah.
When the other guy gets torn apart, he just has straight on like pop the legs in, tape it up, and you're all good.
There's no skeleton, so there's like this sense of. What's actually holding him up? What's the magic involved in this situation? Yeah, okay. Yeah. I guess that is a bit of a problem, yeah. I mean, maybe he was cut in half and he was actually still alive, but the EMP got him in the end.
I mean, part of my thinking was, like, these commandos are so bought into their kind of, like, their given role that I think he just wanted to die for the sake of dying, because it was, like, that's what needed to
happen.
That's
the noble thing to do. Yeah.
In the war.
That's what his programming told him to do. Yeah. Because, I mean, you know, at first the Gorgonites are all about, we have to lose. That's what we're programmed to do.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, maybe he's just programmed to die in battle if he suffers horrific damage.
Yeah. Yeah.
I really enjoyed Tommy Lee Jones, though, as Chip Hazard.
I thought
it was a great.
I thought
he was
really good.
Yeah.
Although I could, every time he talked, in the back of my mind, all I heard was, "You gotta be the best, best. I'm the best. I'm the best, sir." Like from Men in Black. Like,
it's just... Yeah. Well, but just the dryness of Tommy Lee Jones to be able to deliver the cheesy, his memory will go on and on and on. Like because of his battery, his memory will go on and on and on. That was the joke.
Yeah,
and it's just like he delivers it so dryly, and it's so funny, but it's such a terrible joke. Like,
Yeah, this isn't a movie that I would have pegged him for, because I remember hearing like he like hated doing Batman Forever, which was I think 95, like so a few years before this.
Yeah.
And so I wonder, because he thought he was, it seemed like he was kind of above it, like it was so corny and stuff. And so then it's weird to me that he would go from that movie to then making a movie about, and like I wonder how they sold him on this movie.
Yeah.
Or maybe it was just because he was going to be with the Dirty Dozen cast and
That
whatnot.
might be what it is, because yeah, if you can't get the Predator cast, then it's like, hey, you get to work with these guys. I think that would be, I mean, the fact that you get half of these guys, because I don't know how many of them are actually comedian type guys or that would have a sense of, like, I know Ernest Borgnine is a funny guy, but I don't know how many of them are. No, well, okay, no, never mind. George Kennedy was in The Naked Gun. Bruce Dern has done some funny shit, so okay, I guess they'd all be in on the joke. Yeah, and of course the Spinal Tap guys. I mean, you got Harry Shearer there. You got legendary voice actor Harry Shearer as one of your Gorgonites. Yeah.
If they made this movie today, I wonder what like groups they would do. Maybe the like Fast and the Furious squad
Oh, yeah.
versus the what's like a comedic, maybe the like Seth Rogen those guys.
Yeah. So apparently, this movie is in the Gremlins universe. There's yet another movie in the Gremlins universe because Alan has a skull on his desk and it's a Gremlin skull.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
Yeah. So this, Explorers, Goonies, and of course Gremlins, all part of the Gremlin-iverse, the Joe Dante-iverse.
Should have put it in Astoria.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, just be like Stephen King and just set them all in the same town.
I mean, do they ever say where it is?
I don't think they do.
Then
No,
I'll just
not
imagine
that.
that it is.
There we go. Yeah, it's in Astoria. I enjoyed the character of which one? Archer. I enjoyed Archer as well. The it's been done before in other movies, but even the, you know, Alan now shut up. Greetings, Alan now shut up. I mean, I thought it was done well, and I thought it was played well.
Yeah. My I'd hate to keep poking holes, but one of my big problems with the toys is the way they try to logically explain why they're not talking when the parents show up. Like,
Yeah.
oh, because Archer told like because Alan told Archer he's not gonna be talking,
They don't have Toy
or stuff
Story
like that.
rules,
Like, yeah,
yeah.
they try to like make it so that the Toy Story rules are there, but they're not in the logical system of how these toys operate.
Yeah, you need Andy's coming.
I also didn't really understand like how you even activate these guys in the first place. Like what's stopping the Commando Elite from just breaking out of their thing immediately?
Well,
Do they have like the little plastic tab to take the battery out, or do
no,
you
yeah,
have to say
the who
the
goes
voice
there or
command?
whatever. Yeah, that it's the voice
Oh.
command. Yeah, I mean, Alexa knows to answer me when I say her name, right? I think it's the same. Halt, who goes there? Yeah,
Yeah.
that's all. That's the Gorgonites, at least. I forget what the other guy's voice command was. Yeah.
It's the Commando Elite one is like attention or something like that, like
Or Ten Hut, or
ten, yeah, something like
yeah
that.
yeah so I mean, he's able to activate all the rest of them in the toy store. You just need one, and they're smart
Yeah.
enough. Yeah.
I was not a big fan of the name of Alan's family's toy store. It was called the Inner Child, which I
Yeah.
just think is the weakest, lamest name for a toy st like a toy store ever. I'm not walking in there.
I also like the name of the rival toy store that they have in this, and I'll tell you about it in Sponsorship Corner. You gave me a way in. Always on the lookout for product placements in movies, this week's Small Soldiers is brought to you by Volkswagen Cars, Honda Scooters, Crown Forklifts, Motocross Magazine, Motorola Radios, DeWalt Tools, Visa and MasterCard, Joe Boxer, JVC Electronics, Spalding, and Victor Mousetraps. Plus the fictional Globotech, Heartland Play Systems, the Inner Child Toy Store, Giant Toy World, something called, quote, Sleep Aid, and of course, the Gwendy Doll. And this has been Sponsorship Corner.
Oh, yeah, Gwendy.
Giant Toy World. I mean, they could have at least made it like Al's Toy Barn or something. I mean,
there's something always funny about names that just are like when it's the name is just the descriptor of what it is, like
Sleep.
Like
Aid.
In that Simpsons episode where it's like Wacky Inflatable Tube Man or whatever.
Oh, no, Wacky Waving Inflatable Arm Flailing Tube Man. Yeah, that's Family Guy.
Family Guy. Yeah. Yeah.
Hi, I'm Al Harrington from Al Harrington's Wacky Wavy Inflatable Arm Flailing Tube Man Emporium. That's right. Yeah. So these soldiers get legitimately scary at one point. Once they start, like, leveling up, they've got some pretty deadly shit going on. This is not Sid's backyard happening here. This is some dangerous stuff.
Now, these guys aren't they're not like the army guys from Toy Story. They're like a legit, like, I actually think I would have loved to see a sequel to this movie where we get to see the military like capabilities of these guys.
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because I didn't remember the movie well enough, and I, you know, considered watching it with my children, and I'm kind of glad I didn't, because it's like, whoa, yeah, no, I don't think they would have handled this very well. Because no. It's got that Gremlins tone. I mean, it gets kind of dark at certain points, especially when they start like killing off the commandos. Like, it, you know, Garbarate the commandos. Like, is that just a nod to Gremlins? It feels like everything's a nod to Gremlins. Like, the password for to get the microchips is Gizmo. Like,
yeah, it must be.
Joe Dante's
Dante
like,
just really loves Gremlins.
Yeah, he's like, I did one thing really well.
Yeah. The only thing I did right.
This is just a ripoff of Gremlins with toys. But I'll get old Joe in it.
What were your feelings on Alan's parents?
Which ones were Alan's parents? I have to think about that. Abernathy's.
Like
Kevin Dunn, right.
Yeah, his dad basically only yells and is like constantly accusing. Like, one of the things that kind of bothered me in this movie is like, it's hard to buy Alan as the kid that everybody's saying he is.
Yeah.
Like, he doesn't come across as the kid who, you know, called in bomb threats and like graffiti tagged all this stuff. And mm-hmm. so like, and because we don't get to see it, it's really hard to buy him as this like troubled youth.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because for the rest of the movie he doesn't really come off that way.
No. That is part of the, like, I didn't have problems with the parents. Like, I enjoyed the parents for what they were, but I didn't like the lack of backstory, and that's what's missing, is this delinquency that is supposedly part of this character that, yeah. All I see is a kid that wants to get a girl to notice him. That's all I see. Yeah.
Yeah, like, he's not, like, the comparable I was thinking would be, like, Danny in, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah.
Like, that's kind of, like, how they're trying to paint him, but at least with Danny, you get to see him, like, pocket people and smoke menthol cigarettes and stuff and that sort of thing, but with it, and then it kind of seemed, because at parts, it seems like especially when Archer doesn't talk when the parents are there, like they're trying to show that similar, like, again,
do
similar
they
to Gremlins.
Going crazy, or
well, it's just like that like stuff is happening, and they think he's responsible, and he's saying like, no, it's the toys, but like nothing like really bad happens.
Yeah.
Like the worst thing that happens is like when the commando elite break into
Trash the
Christie's
toy
house,
store. Well, there's
trash the
that.
toy store,
Yeah.
but also like when they break into Christie's house,
And set up
like
their Frankenstein lab.
you would have thought if this guy's such a criminal, that was the time for like Phil Hartman to show up, see this like crazy boy in his daughter's room, and like blame him for everything that's happened because he's such a bad egg and all this stuff.
And what's funny about that is that it's Phil Hartman that is the one that's a shit disturber in this movie.
Yeah.
For as far as human characters go, he's the one that's like chopping branches in the neighbor's yard and stuff like that, you know. Oh, don't worry, I can handle it. You know,
Yeah.
like it's almost like they have the parents mixed up. It's almost like her dad should be the angry one and his dad should be the one that I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what to think about the.
Needed with they needed they needed with Alan. I was just thinking, you know that Treehouse of Horror Simpsons episode where Bart is like seeing the he's like it's the boy who
Oh,
cried wolf and
yeah.
he's seeing the gremlin
On the
that
side of the
like
bus, yeah.
takes the wheel out of the bus and all that stuff
Yeah, the
and
Twilight
everybody
Zone
thinks he's going
episode one.
crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like they needed a little bit of that when it came to Alan and the toys.
Yeah, I mean, really, ultimately, when I watched this movie, I really enjoyed it, but it was the soldiers themselves, the storyline with the soldiers that I was having the most fun with this movie. Right?
Yeah.
A lot of the times, the humans I could have done without. Like, it's even disappointing that for this movie that's a posthumously released movie, that this is what we get for Phil Hartman. You know, you mentioned Jingle All the Way. That this is something that, you know, or maybe it was last week you mentioned it, but you know, you mentioned that that's the last time we saw Phil Hartman was Jingle All the Way, and it's essentially the same character, but he had more to do in Jingle All the Way, at least.
I was gonna say, like, I don't like for this being his last movie. Unfortunately, I hate saying this. He's not mem I don't even really remember him in. I only remember the scene of him with the chainsaw, and then I think he comes back at the end and gets paid off by Gil. But
Yeah.
does he like I don't remember
There.
him doing anything else in between those two things.
Well, there is the whole scene where the house is under siege, and the one wife is hitting. You know, they've got people hidden in the closet. The one wife is hitting the Molotov cocktails back out to them with a tennis racket. And so he's got stuff going on in that scene where he's cowering behind couches and, I don't know, running around in panic.
Yeah.
But, I mean, but he's part of the larger thing, and it's the toys that steal the show in this movie. You
For
don't
sure.
watch Toy Story for Andy.
For sure. I was just gonna say, I think not to keep comparing it to Toy Story, but I would have liked this movie a lot more if it was like the actual war between the soldiers and the Gorgonites. And it was all and it all was like behind the back of the humans where they weren't like the main figures, I guess.
Yeah,
Because
it's hard not to compare this to Toy Story. I mean,
yeah.
like I said at the top, it's Toy Story if Buzz Lightyear never becomes self-aware, but it's also a little bit of Gremlins. So that's the thing, is it's like it's two different movies that are other movies.
Yeah. I also think like one thing that was intrigued me was after they have the big standoff at Christie's house and all the commando elite get destroyed and then Chip goes in essentially like he intercepts that shipment and gets a whole bunch of like why wasn't there another Chip? Like did he like I wish they would have showed something to the effect of him purposefully like not activating another chip hazard or seeing one like even that to compare it to Buzz, one of my favorite moments of Toy Story is when they meet the second Buzz Lightyear and I think it's Toy Story 3. Two or three, I can't remember which one, but
The box that he got is one of each. That's mm-hmm. that's what he managed to get from Joe off the truck. Yeah, one of each. And so, yeah, it would be fun to have multiple chip hazards. And, you know, hey, guys, you could have set up a sequel, but...
Yeah. There's a lot of sequel opportunity. I mean, I guess the Gorgonites can't, like, really procreate, but I mean... I'm imagining some kind of like Planet of the Apes scenario going on in Yosemite with these toys.
Yeah.
Where they maybe like tame some animals and ride around on squirrels and stuff. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I kind of want to see that movie. Kind of want to see Gorgonites in the wild. Yeah. Oh, I realized one place in this movie, though, that has to be CGI. And that's with the Gorgonites swimming around in the fish tank. Because the fish are not reacting at all. There's an angelfish in that tank. I have an angelfish. And anytime I come near the tank, it swims away from where I am. So, yeah, that's the only place that had to be CGI. I guess their puppets must not have worked in the water. I can't expect that they would have.
I remember there was one point when Alan's in the store and he's like having a conversation with, it must be Archer, where... I thought it was CGI, but the only reason I thought it was CGI was because his eye line seemed really off.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like he was looking above the figure, not at it.
Mm.
And I was just like, oh, that was probably just early CGI or something. And it wasn't like how in Avengers they have, like, the massive, tall, like, little thing for when you gotta look up.
Really, yeah, yeah.
It's lower when you gotta look down.
Yeah, but it's nice to think, though, that I'm still questioning what is CGI. And they did a good enough job that I'm questioning it. And good on you, 25-year-old movie. You know, like, not too bad. The Gwendy doll scene, I had to laugh that how much it reminded me of Weird Science. When they bring the Barbie to life, or, you know, set up the Barbie. The Gwendy dolls, they basically just animated them all to be like hookers. Like that's what's going on there, right? It's my guys need some loving, and so I'm gonna reanimate all these Barbies.
Is that? I thought they were just looking for options for like reinforcements, but definitely afterwards it seemed like they were a little.
Yeah, that's what I gather from it, but it's just like when you get animated, do you have working pieces that aren't normally on dolls? Though, I mean, it's not going to be fun for either of you. I'm going to say that right now. It's usually just bumps, you know. Those Gwendy dolls, though, are kind of nightmare fuel. Like, when they, like, abduct Kirsten Dunst and, you know, they send the hostage video over to Alan, like, but they're just, the one with the melted face and,
Yeah, I bet that was easy money for Sarah Michelle Gellar and Christina Ricci.
It had to be.
Like, that's probably so much fun.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the only job that would have been easier than that would have probably been I Am Groot, you know?
Yeah, I guess.
I couldn't help but notice that they had not one, but two Wilhelm screams in this movie. That was something that I definitely noticed. What would your number be? At the end, when Dennis Leary shows up in his chopper and he's just handing out checks, in that situation, what do you think your number is? Do you think it's got 5 zeros or 6 zeros or 7 or 8? Like, you know, like,
I'm probably gonna like stick it in the 6-0 range.
Yeah don't like, need to be greedy and go for the double digit millions, you know, like,
I guess, like, in that situation, I would want, like, a new house, a new car, and some... I would say, like, I'd probably peg it at, like, 3 to 5 mil.
3 to 5? I'd be happy. Yeah. Yeah, I think I could probably be happy with... Yeah. Okay. 5. Done. Yeah.
I do think it's kind of odd that I read in one of the reviews I read that the person didn't like the movie because really at the end there's like zero consequences for Globotech. Like they just kind of get off scot-free. Like there's no, like at the end of the day, there's no real justice done.
No, he just comes in and pays everybody off. That's for sure. Yeah. I realized that Chip Hazard doesn't just get cut in half and die. He's the one that gets electrocuted. He's the one that, yeah, completes the circuit for setting off the EMP. Yeah, so it's not just cut in half. Wasn't it Chip Hazard that you said?
No, Nick Nitro, he gets cut in
Oh,
half
I'm
and then.
sorry. I thought you said Chip Hazard. Right. They do have great names. Brick Bazooka, Link Static, Butch Meat Hook. Got some Kip Killigan. Ugh, that
I
was
wish they would have,
unfortunate.
like, I was thinking afterwards, it would have been nice if they not completely ripped off G.I. Joe, but would have had like one ninja guy in there on in their little brigade.
Yeah, that would have been pretty cool. I mean, no girls either. The Gorgonites had a girl, even though it was voiced by a boy. But I think that's the one that Jim Cummings did. I think Jim Cummings did the girl.
I mean, I'm shocked there's a girl. If there's anything I've learned from listening to books about Marvel and their toy companies, it's that girl toys don't sell.
No.
So I don't feel like they would make them. I don't think like there would have been a girl in either of those toy lines, to be honest.
Well, no, instead they throw the girl power in the movie with Spice Girls. I really enjoy that Spice Girls wannabe is the psychological torture that is chosen by the
Yeah.
commandos. I don't know. What would your song be?
Huh.
Oh, that what's that monkey one? The Love Monkey, or it was huge a few years ago. Yeah. Thank God. I finally blocked it out of my memory. I can't think of what it's, except now that's gonna bug me now.
What would my torture song be?
Baby Shark.
I don't know. Do you remember like back in the day when the bear had the like really tough contest and there was somebody who had to like I swear it was like they had to sit in a room
Oh
and
yeah.
just listen to Wake Me Up When September Ends for
Yep.
like I don't remember how long it was, but it was a really, really long
Yeah,
time.
it was like a week or something like that. And but it wasn't even Wake Me Up When September Ends. It was only like the first 15 seconds and then there was a
Yeah, like the
record scratch and then it started again.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it was pitch black room. Yeah, this is the one that I'm thinking of. It's called Dance Monkey.
Oh, that dance monkey dance monkey dance on another
Yep, that's
leg.
the one. Yeah, that would probably be one that would do it for me. Yeah, that
Gotcha, yeah.
one. Yeah. And that's enough of that.
Mine would probably be something definitely like something Billie Eilish, like a Drake. I can't stand a Drake. That would be enough to drive me off the wall.
Yeah. Nickelback.
Nah, I could listen to Nickelback all day.
Yeah. I'm sad to say, so could I. Well, there we go. That is Small Soldiers. Oh boy, Colin. Now on IMDb, it scored a 6.2 out of 10 and has a Metascore of none listed. Once again, 2 weeks in a row. I don't know. IMDb has been weird lately. I don't know whether they're actually listing Metascores. I don't know. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 49% on the tomato meter and an audience rating of 45%. But Colin, those are just numbers. Like Toy soldier in a garbage disposal. Hit us with some reviews.
And we doubled up on doubled up on the garbage disposal. That's all we got.
Yeah, that's right. Well, do you have anything better than garbage disposal then for me? I don't know.
I mean, I was just gonna say maybe it's like a soldier shoved into the power
Yeah,
pole or something.
like an EMP going off and frying all your chips. Hit us with some reviews.
All right, unnamed reviewer gives 3.5 out of 5 stars, says, I feel like some of its characters, small soldiers, could be viewed as cannon fodder for some of you readers, but I must protest. In my youth, I remember renting this from a video store, Cheers Channel 5 in Rustington, and watching it on a Saturday night thinking it was pretty hardcore for a PG and just a great film. Several years later, that Saturday night slot has been replaced by Saturday afternoon one, and although I wouldn't still describe this film as great, my wife and I will pretty much always sit down and watch this if we find it on TV. It's one of those films that although we own the DVD, I'm not convinced the disc has ever been used. It's a classic TV movie. Tommy Lee Jones has an absolute ball as the over-the-top commando leader, and Frank Langella is much more understated as Archer, emissary of the Gorgonites. The effects are surprisingly decent, and the film is tremendous fun. Your kids will have a ball. Just bear in mind, it is definitely of the PG-12A bracket.
Yeah, all right. That kind of sums it all up. Yeah, that's a decent review.
This one's 4.5 out of 5 stars. Honestly underrated and overly criticized for violence in a kids' movie. When it itself is criticism of selling violence to kids, corporatism, and subjugation of people who are different. Way ahead of its time.
Okay.
1.5-star review. I remember watching Small Soldiers when I was younger and liking it a lot, but after viewing it for the first time since then, I can firmly say that it's a pretty terrible movie. The story is very cliche, and the overall concept of live-action talking and moving toys seems like it was conceived after watching the first Toy Story. The acting is fine, but the dialogue is embarrassingly cheesy, even for a mid-90s kids movie. The lead character is not likable whatsoever, and half the time you wish he would just shut the fuck up. The visuals are pretty good, and some even hold up to this very day, but that's not enough to save the sinking ship. Small Soldiers is not fun, not smart, shamelessly cliche, and hilariously forgettable. You'd have more fun watching paint dry than giving this mindless dribble a shot.
I'll go with not smart. I'll definitely agree with not smart. That's a good thing to say about this movie, I've realized, listening to that one, where it's like, yeah. It's rehashing ideas. It's...
Yeah. This reviewer gives it 5 out of 5 stars and says, awesome movie. Screw the critics. It's not supposed to be Dunkirk, okay? Anyways, my gamer tag has been Gorgonite ever since I was 13, lol. If you like this movie, definitely check out Indian in the Cupboard, another classic.
You could tell when the movie was written, right? Like, or the review was written. It was obviously around the time that Dunkirk came out, right? Yeah. If it was, like, made this year, it's not supposed to be Oppenheimer, okay? Like, that would be the updated version of that review.
I'll end on this one. I don't know if it's supposed to be sarcastic, but it's a 5 out of 5 star review and says... A generation-defining piece of cinema with world-class cinematography and scoring. Tommy Lee Jones and cast put on one of the best acting performances since Citizen Kane. Archer and the Gorgonites are a sight to behold and a true treasure to witness. Kirsten Dunst, best performance in Spider-Man 1 with Tobey Maguire. 11 out of 5.
Right on. Yeah. I'm pretty sure that one was sarcastic. Yeah. Yeah.
That's reasonable.
Nice. Okay. So, Small Soldiers. Yeah, I mean, kind of middle of the road for reviews anyway. I'm surprised it's IMDb that has the highest rating, 6.2. You know, the Rotten Tomatoes, both under 50. I kind of agree with the sentiment of a lot of those where it's like, it's fun. I really had a good time with this movie, but it really was the soldiers and the voice cast that stole this show. Those toys stole this show, and I wanted more of that. But, I mean, I've already compared it to Toy Story. I've already compared it to Gremlins. I like both of those movies. And so that recipe put together, this is something that I like. Like you said about Phil Hartman, it's disappointing that him and some of the other characters are just kind of forgettable, but it's the toys movie, I guess. Or at least that's what it ended up being, was the toys movie. So I still had fun with it. I'd float more up with the IMDb at 6.2 than I would down with the Rotten Tomatoes in the 40s. You know, I had fun. I'm glad I saw it. Yeah.
Yeah. I agree with you. I would say that I definitely struggled. This movie definitely struggled to hold my attention because I didn't find... I agree with you. I love the toys. I love the stuff with the Commando Elite. I wish the Gorgonites would have got a little bit more time, like that we would have got to see them kind of like interact with each other in the same way that we got to see the Commando Elite kind of interact with each other as a team.
Yeah. I wanted more toys.
Yeah. But I didn't buy the love story between Alan and Christy, and
not at all. Not at all.
Yeah, the human characters just, I felt like they always just got in the way. They were boring.
Mm-hmm.
Like they weren't interesting at all. I would have much rather it just kind of be like they maybe only got involved at the end with the big final battle. Maybe they got involved there, but for the most part, for the rest of the movie, I wish it would have just been the Commando Elite and the Gorgonites battling, and maybe you interjected a little bit with the Global Tech guys, like realizing they have a problem in some other way than like, really, that's like the only thing that Alan served to do was get them back involved.
Yeah. When he calls customer service to complain. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Like other than that, Alan is actually like completely unnecessary.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, the thing that's funny is as you talk there, I get this flash of a Transformers movie, but where the Transformers are actual Transformer size. You know, so yeah. It's like, you know, the humans are just around while this war is going on. They're just, you know, random casualties in this big fight that's happening, but it's just on a much smaller scale, and I think that would be amazing.
And I think it works better because you like keep the Toy Story principle of where they could be awake when the humans are there, but they're still trying to like maintain their cover for each other. And so it's like you would almost just like have them causing messes, mm-hmm. and like in the background you can see like the parents are blaming the kids, and like maybe as the movie goes on, it's like the kid is going to detention and he's going to juvie, and it's nothing of it's his fault anyways.
A bit more mischief happening in the movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
I forgot to mention that, like, when they trash the toy store, the fact that he is able to clean up that well is amazing. You know, the only problem is the ship. Oh, and his dad notices it, of course. But, like, they fucked that place up. And he and Kirsten Dunst somehow managed to get it repaired.
Yeah, you know what? To be honest, if they wanted to keep Alan in it and have him be, like, the central figure of the movie, the better way to have done it, because his whole goal in getting these action figures is to sell them to make money for his store.
Yeah, because his dad's a shitty business owner, apparently.
But it's like, so say he what if he was able to like sell sell them all, and now he's forced to like, and maybe he just keeps like one, like he keeps Archer or whatever, but like it would have been more interesting if he had actually sold them to somebody. And then all of a sudden,
and
like,
that's where the problems start.
Shit,
yeah.
Starts happening, and now he has to like find a way to get them back, and before they like, you know, start messing shit up and that,
yeah,
kind of thing.
One of them should have gone home with the little brother.
Yeah, because that would have been the thing too. Is like say the brother had bought all the Commando Elite. And the Gorgonites had gone. They're next door neighbors. They could, mm-hmm. easily be in the window, like, and then it's like half of it is just the Commando Elite plotting from the neighbor's house about how they're gonna get over there to get the Gorgonites. And then you have like Alan, like, I don't know, learning like, I don't know, yoga from the Gorgonites or whatever. They're teaching them their ways and stuff. Yeah. And then you have the big like climactic battle where somebody, one of those Gorgonites, definitely has to die to rally the troops, and then you go, mm-hmm. to the end, and then you get a big battle at the end where everything, they can end it basically the exact same way that they did, but I don't know, just spread it out a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. No, the idea that no one else was put in jeopardy other than Alan in the beginning is definitely a good point. I mean, you need someone to take that Chucky doll home.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
and so
exactly.
You're right. That's a huge missed opportunity. That right there, or even the fact that even if her brother had just bought one of them, and part of the mission is trying to get back to the store to get the other ones awakened, you know, like it's, you know, part of that is recruiting the troops slowly into the house. I don't know, you know.
I also think it's a missed opportunity to end with the whole, like, BS global tech pays everybody off. The way this movie should have ended is, like, there's where are these Chip Hazard figures at? Yeah. Where are these extra Chip Hazard ones? Like, one of those, like, I would have just ended it with, like, that Chip Hazard, another Chip Hazard figure, like, being opened by some kid at the credits. Like,
yeah. Oh, we didn't stop the shipment in time.
Yeah.
There we go. Yeah.
These were the only ones that made it through.
Well, there we go. That is Small Soldiers. Shoulders. Small Shoulders. That's Small Soldiers, and that's our show for this week. Oh, boy. You know, if you like that show, just tell somebody. Word of mouth is so important for a podcast, or go over to whatever podcast or whatever app you listen to your podcast on and give us some stars. Give us 5 stars, help drive us up those charts, help us get noticed. Or if you want to be a financial supporter of this show, go over to patreon.com/IUsedToLikeThisOne, become an executive producer, and then you get a shout out right here on this show, just like Joshua Blum of the 13th Hour Podcast.
And be sure to check out our website, IUsedToLikeThisOne.com, where you can find links to all of our podcast episodes and social media pages. Drop us a line at IUsedToLikeThisOne@gmail.com. Let us know what movies you used to like. Let us know what you think of the show. Send us all your good vibes and good messages. And, you know, maybe we'll give you a shout out and just say, hey, thanks for the love.
Music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band, Carter and the Capitals, anywhere you listen to music. Our posthumously released month is over. And, I mean, it's too bad that it's the unmemorable performance that it goes out on. But next month, we're into February. We're into the month of love. I'm excited for this new one. It's weird that of all the people that we could have chosen to highlight in a month, it's Meg Ryan. We're doing a month of Meguary.
Meguary.
Everybody loves Meg in Meguary.
Well, I mean, yeah, Meg Ryan, you know. She had a time as the queen of the rom-com scene, so I mean, it's not surprising.
Yeah. Yeah. So
next year we can do Sandra Bullock.
There we go, yeah. how many does she have? Maybe some
know.
Drew Barrymore ones?
Yeah.
I don't know.
McConaughey?
Never been
kissed. McConaughey? I don't know.
McConaughey. But yeah, everybody loves Meg and Meguary. We've got. I'm gonna throw one at you that I know you haven't seen, but I think this is the best way to kick off Meguary. We're gonna go Nicolas Cage and Meg Ryan, and let's do City of Angels.
Is that a Ghost Rider movie?
No, it isn't, but he dresses similar to how he does in Ghost Rider because he's got a big old black trench coat in this movie. No, City of Angels, Nicolas Cage is not a human person in this movie. So he is an angel. Captain Holt from Brooklyn Nine-Nine, Andre Braugher, or is it Braugher?
I think it's Brower.
Brower, okay. Andre Brower is in it as well. He is also an angel. And Meg Ryan is the person that this angel has fallen in love with. So,
right.
Yeah.
It's not like the only angel movie I ever think of is that John Travolta one. I think it's called like Michael.
Michael. Yeah, Michael. I can't think of another Nicolas Cage love movie, though.
I mean, this guy, he's got like the second largest IMDb after Samuel L. Jackson. I feel like there's going to be one. What about The Family Man?
Family Man? Is that a rom-com? Mm. I thought...
I guess it's kind of like a... It's usually... It's
a dramedy?
It's touted as like a Christmas movie, I guess.
Is it really?
Because it like kind of like takes place around Christmas. It's kind of like It's a Wonderful Life. He gets to see his like alternate reality.
Yeah. But Nick Cage is just, he's never really just the, he's not the leading romance man that you think of. Like, he's always got some woman in his movie, but he's, yeah, he's just, he doesn't do the rom-com. So, I mean, this isn't a comedy.
Con Air is kind of a rom-com. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I will say that we have Meg Ryan comedy. We are starting the month off serious. This is a drama.
All right.
So, but it's Nick Cage, man. So, Nick Cage is an angel.
All right, I'm looking forward to it.
Well, there we go. So, until Maguary, I'm Sean Wells.
I'm Nicolas Cage.
And we'll see you next time for City of Angels on I Used to Like This One.
And be sure to check out our website.
Oh, God. Sorry.
Yeah. Hold on. Went down the wrong tube. Okay.
A cookie?
Yeah.